Beware, spoiler phobes. You have stumbled upon a storm of spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones series in conjunction with the Song of Ice and Fire books by George R.R. Martin. This discussion can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, guesses, theories, and general crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder. You do not wish to be spoiled or are not caught up. Please stop now.
The realm. Do you know what the realm is? It's the thousand blades of Aegon's enemies. A story we agree to tell each other over and over till we forget that it's a lie.
But what do we have left once we abandon the lie? Chaos. A gaping pit waiting to swallow us all.
Chaos isn't a pit. Chaos is a ladder.
Hello, and welcome back to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I have not read any of the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
I'm Joanna Robinson. I've read every book in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, and I read all of your crackpot theories that did not come true last week.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all the books in George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series, and I'm just here to fight for my feminist platform, but I'm doing so off screen, so don't worry, it'll be fine.
You, of course, are listening to the show that spoils a whole bunch of Game of Thrones, even if that means setting you up for things that don't happen. As was the case this week, Season 6, Episode 8, No One, but before we get to that, we're going to listen to you, the listener, who has left us reviews.
All right. So I'm going to do my best, like, I don't know, bro accent to read this first one. This is from JustinLand246 from the United States. It's average, 2 stars.
The podcast could be so much better, but the lady podcaster uses the podcast as a feminist platform and not stick to show or book. Wish she wasn't on it.
Yeah, I think that was pretty good.
That's a really fantastic bro voice. Yeah, and I just want everybody to know, just before we get accused of anything, that voice was requested by the bros on the show.
That was a bro request.
It's a bro sanctioned bro voice.
All right. This is another one that's going to require an accent, and it's an unusual one. This is Jackie Jormjorm Jr. from the United States. Spoilers are a ladder, 5 stars. Game of Thrones recap podcasts are a dime a dozen. I know, because I listen to 12 of them. This one stands out and tops my list because it embraces the reviled spoiler. The deeper I dive into my Game of Thrones obsession, the more I've come to appreciate the enrichment. This can be read with Dornish or any other accent. That was terrible, but that's my terrible Dornish accent for Jackie Jormjorm. So thank you guys for all your reviews. Please leave us more. We got a lot of reviews this week. Yeah, leave us your thoughts.
I feel like the only people, there's no like real person who could be offended by the Dornish accent, because it's not like a real, anything real.
No, I mean, so especially my version that I just did right now bears no resemblance to any accent on this planet. So
yeah, I feel pretty safe this week.
Yeah.
In different ways you could interact with the show. Neil, what's something that ended up showing everybody how generous that they are to us? We realize how generous you are. I'm screwing up this intro.
It's okay. If you guys would like to support the show directly with your gold dragons or silver stags, those are two real currencies, by the way, you can go to paypal.me/stormofspoilers. Leave us a little tip. We greatly appreciate it. We did some math on it this week, and y'all are very, very generous, and we love you dearly.
You sounded especially Austonian right there. Even though
I think it's the allergies.
Okay.
Okay, I should have lent in with something about, have your sparrows learned anything of the rumors of the tip jar? You could be like, much, much more.
Much, no? Much more. Yeah.
Finally, we get to talk about Game of Thrones. This week, we start off as we thought we would, with the Hound killing a whole bunch of people. It was nice because it turns out the Brotherhood hasn't gone completely bad. But I did feel kind of okay for recapping Beric Dondarrion for my readers at Geek.com, even though in the best case scenario, he would have been dead by the time we caught up with him. He didn't. Therefore, he did not sacrifice himself to create Lady Stoneheart or Lady anybody yet or Stone any him in the future. other than that, some really cool axe wielding by the Hound that went down good in my book. I know it was a weird night to watch it, but in rewatching it, in terms of, as far as axe violence goes, like disemboweling through the groin is a creative use of axe.
Oh yeah, all that stuff that came
not the Hound's
tumbling
first
out
time either.
Ugh.
Yeah,
he did that to the guy who tried to rape Sansa in King's Landing. Remember?
He's
very good at getting the guts to the floor, unlike any other character.
He does seem really into disemboweling them during a hanging scene that trolls book readers for a second.
Okay.
Correct?
More than a second.
Yeah, definitely. I have to say, this guy, you know who's to blame for everyone being so hyped up about this? It's the actor who's playing Lem Lemoncloak. I don't know if you guys follow him on social media, but that guy is milking his two episodes and like eight lines for all they're worth. He's been like teasing Lady Stoneheart. I didn't believe him necessarily. Not that I didn't believe like Lady Stoneheart, but I didn't believe that like he had any actual information that he could share, because HBO would have shut him down a long time ago if he did. And this week after the episode aired, he like read the like she doesn't speak but she remembers line like on social media. Like, this guy is just like, give me the spotlight. And I you know, for all of our listeners who engage with the Game of Thrones actors on social media, I'm wondering who you think milked this more. Was it the Dothraki guys who died right away? Was it Lem Lemoncloak who died right away? Or was it how is one of the guys at the Tower of Joy? I think Hightower, Gerald Hightower, that actor. Like, they are just like, we've got two episodes or one episode or one scene, and we're just going to like, this is it. And I don't blame them.
I mean, I don't blame him either.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you like,
but so,
I mean,
Neil, I know you weren't really super duper happy with this episode. And I know you're especially unhappy. Well, two things. First of all, when the episode ended, Neil messaged me, he's like, Lady Stoneheart hype at an all time high. And I was like, Lady Stoneheart hype at an all time low, as is our usual roles in this sort of thing. And then, so I wanted to hear where you are in the hype of that. And then two, I want to know if you're happy about the like the Brotherhood twist and that they didn't completely fuck up the Brotherhood, all of that.
So much to unpack here. First, I think overall on the episode, and this will come out as we talk about the rest of it, I didn't hate it as much as I hated the one from last week. Mm-hmm. I think it had a lot to do with the fact that they did kind of clear up the Brotherhood thing. You know, the Lady Stoneheart thing, I guess I did kind of get caught up in, they really did a lot of trolling in that sequence. You know, the Hound goes over to the water. They do this like long pan shot of the river, of the bank, you know, and really it was just like a long pan shot so they could show us Rory McCann's dick, I guess. But also then like they cut to like behind him and they show the water as he's peeing, and it's like, why is this the angle they're choosing for this? Like, what are they trying to tell us about what's in the river? And I'm like, God, this is horrific trolling on the part of the show. Cause by this time we can, you know, Beric Dondarrion's back, and it's like, man, this obviously the Lady Stoneheart thing is kind of dead. And then, you know, Edmure later in the episode talks about being in a cell for years. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to find her body anywhere.
Yeah, I think one of our listeners said she would be Lady Boneheart at this point.
Lady Boneheart.
Yeah.
That's a really good one. But I do like the fact that they kind of cleaned up. I was really worried about the Brotherhood from some of the production stuff we had heard And then from what happened in last week's episode, I was like, man, this really doesn't make sense for the Brotherhood. And the fact that it turned out to just be some rogue agents made a lot of sense. And I really enjoyed the whole sequence, and I'm actually kind of excited to see where it goes. And, you know, while I would love to get a little Lady Stoneheart surprise, having the Hound with the Brotherhood is kind of an interesting new wrinkle that could be fun to watch.
Not
the worst thing in the world.
I loved having, I think we all expected Paul Kay to come back. I actually didn't know, as Thoros, I actually didn't know that Beric Dondarrion was going to be in this episode, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It's weird to, Richard Dormer is not like a small time
I know.
Actor.
So we got surprised. How exciting. Yeah. And I thought he was so great because last time we met Beric, I mean, in the first season when we met Beric, he was a different actor, but in the last time we saw him, he was, you know, super bummed a lot of the time, which is understandable. But Richard Dormer now is playing him as a sort of like swashbuckle. Like, I love him. He's just like very Errol Flynn to me. And he's like, let's go north and fuck up some White Walkers. And I'm like, yes, Beric, with your eye patch that your own should have, lead us north. So I'm excited.
At least we got one swarthy eye patch wearing guy this season.
What did you think, Dave? What did you think of Thoros and Beric?
I mean, I like it. I like the idea of taking the Hound and moving north. It's not what we predicted, and maybe that helps a little bit in making it feel fresh, but I'm more like unleashing the Hound in a way that he could both live up to his violent nature and be on the side that I could root for pretty consistently. And not that I haven't been rooting for him since he fucked off from King's Landing, but now, you know, he could take the axe to countless whites and White Walkers if they, like, maybe they give him, like, an obsidian-tipped axe or something.
Yeah, Valyrian steel axe. Ooh.
It'd be pretty sweet. But yeah. I'd be into that for sure. And then, I don't know, maybe at some point he gets together and kills his brother, but isn't Gregor on Arya's list?
Yeah, I think the Mountain's on our list. I can't remember if he's on her, like, revised Reader's Digest list.
It's hard
list.
To know who's on Arya's list these days.
Yes. So one thing that a bunch of our listeners have done is, like, come up with, if you want to believe that the Lady Stoneheart hype is dead, not everyone does want to believe that, but if you believe that Lady Stoneheart is truly not coming back at all, I've heard a lot of theories as to, like, who could take her place in the Vengeance game. I actually don't think we need anyone to take her place. I really don't want it to be Arya or Sansa, because Lady Stoneheart is a husk driven only by vengeance, and I've said this before, I don't really want that for the Stark girls. I've heard Stonefish, which is that Brennan Blackfish, could be resurrected and be like the late, you know, Sir Stonefish. What do you guys have, like, a proxy that you would want for Lady Stoneheart?
I mean, it's hard for me to say because you guys know who she is in the book, and I'm dealing with, like, an outline of a character. So are we talking about, do we want someone to be resurrected? Or are we talking about, do we want someone to, like, push against the Freys and avenge the Starks?
An avenging otherworldly presence in the name of Starks.
I'm okay with the fish. I'm also okay with just the Hound getting imbued with, like, some sort of weird Lord of Light power. Like, I don't think it has to be a resurrection, because I think we've seen that enough. So if they're going to go off book in a cool way.
Yeah, they did seem to kind of imply that he might be a chosen one of some kind.
They spent two episodes talking about how he's some kind of chosen one, so they better pay that off at some point.
All right, Neil. He's the prince who was promised. You're Lady Stoneheart proxy?
You know, I think there's always only going to be one in my heart, and it's the original, the OG Lady Stoneheart. I agree that I wouldn't want it to be one of the daughters, because I think they've got their own thing, and, you know, they just have other stuff to do. And I think the Hound fits. I think you could even do the story where, like, maybe the Brotherhood goes off and the Hound is killed, and Beric decides that the Hound is someone worth giving up his life for. It's the Beric thing is weird. It throws it off. I guess the question in my mind is the show going to keep Beric Dondarrion and basically he becomes that kind of sword of vengeance, just in a more fun Errol Flynn-y way? Or are they eventually going to have Beric Dondarrion give up his ninth life or whatever for someone else? I guess the Hound is the most likely position one. I mean, I honestly, it's kind of funny because I still think that there's this possibility that they do Lady Stoneheart anyway. But this is just, it's like, you know how they say that when you die, the light you see is your brain grasping for the last oxygen. So this is like my Lady Stoneheart love grasping for the last bits of oxygen as it dies. I think it's still possible, but I don't know. I think maybe they just go with the Brotherhood is now the Brotherhood that we see with plus the Hound, and that's it.
I'm not ruling it out entirely. I'm ruling it out like 95%, but the 5% of me, remembers that they gave us that really harsh Benjen troll the end of last season, and then gave us Benjen this season. So, right. You know, it could still, this could be like, let's make them all finally believe it's really not going to happen, and then we'll bring her back, you know? So episode 10, maybe? I don't know.
69 minutes in episode 10, yeah. And no description. Like, they could do anything.
There was a description that went out. So HBO is holding back the episode, is like weirdly holding back the episode because they could just Mad Men it and make it so vague. But anyway, they're holding back the episode descriptions on 9 and 10.
They're being very HBO about it.
And that's a reference to a show that was on television. Oh. It's not Game of Thrones.
I forgot we were doing that. That famously had very oblique promos. So, you know, with their Emmy submission, they released two descriptions, and I will try to find them while we talk. My vote for a Lady Stoneheart replacement is Lady Craneheart in her Cersei wig. Like, she's dressed as Cersei. Well, what does that have to do with Catelyn? I don't know. Just sort of made sense to me. She's like in her Cersei costume.
But it looks like Catelyn after being in the river and crossing the narrow sea as a corpse.
You got it. That's it.
I think we're just not, I'm also not really ready to let go of S.C. Davis, especially for that, trash fire that was the end of the Bravo story.
Well, we'll be getting there, and it might lead us back to the Riverlands, but we'll, I guess, get there later.
Right. I mean, do you think it's possible? Okay, I'm probably skipping ahead here, but do you think it's possible Arya gets back to the Riverlands and starts leading the Brotherhood? And she wouldn't have to be resurrected or anything. It just, maybe she becomes that sort of spirit of vengeance.
I think it's very possible. I don't think it's possible this season, but to me, like, as somebody
like
watching
Arya and the Hound, murder buddies.
Yeah, or like watching the show as somebody who is realizing the simplest way is probably out. Like, she's probably the one that deals with the Freys now, I would guess. It's on her way west as she goes to the thing, and then if she happens to be at the Twins while shit's going down in the north and she hears like Jon and Sansa like taking stuff back, she might not try to go to the edge of the world. Oh, yeah, the world's flat. Just, you know, apparently. In canon, or at least in the canon of the characters' heads.
So the episode, I found it. The episode 9 description is, terms of surrender are rejected and accepted. Like, why don't they just release that? And then for episode 10, it's season finale, Cersei faces her trial. Kaboom!
Yeah! Let's go to King's Landing off that. Faith Militant come, Mountain rips the head off, and then she goes and hears a proclamation from Tommen, who doesn't look her in the eye when he outlaws trial by combat, slaying Clegane Bowl with one fell swoop, and also causing Cersei to turn to Qyburn to reference what is most likely the wildfire, leading to a production spoiler from a while back that everybody got really mad at us, but now is totally within the realm of speculation, I think, that she's just going to burn the fuck off out of everybody. I don't know. I'm just really excited to see this. Do you think we're going to get any of it next week?
No. From what I know, fast forward if you want to, we're getting 1/3 Marine, 2/3 Battle of the Bastards.
Ooh, so they really did just put all of their money into one episode.
Yeah, it's dragons and giants. Oh my.
We're going to light everything on fire in this episode.
Yeah, I think someone's calling it the Battle of Ice and Fire. Yeah.
Which would be a cooler name for the episode,
yep.
I guess. But, you know.
I feel like this is something we'll talk about in a season wrap-up show, but these episode titles have been disappointing.
Yeah.
I didn't mind the Broken Man one because that's a nice book reference. Also, like, a lot of times they've burned through their good episode titles already. Like, I was going back through and looking at old episodes today, and it's like, you know, His Watch Is Ended is already an episode title they use, so, like, then they can't use it for When John Ends His Watch. You know, like, they've already burned through a lot of the, like, really good phrases earlier to reference other things. So
George needs to write a whole nother book for them to get 15 more episode titles.
George confirmed on his blog that he met with his editors last week in New York.
What?
He saw Hamilton and he met with his editors. So I don't know, Neil, do you want to make another bold prediction about when The Winds of Winter is coming out?
It will be out before... Let's see. What's a thing that's not going to happen for a while?
Okay, so he's going to go to Comic-Con and say 2 weeks, and everyone's going to cheer.
Ah. I mean, I think if he's meeting with his editors, then he's probably turned in an initial manuscript. And it'd be safe to assume that it might come out by the fall, maybe the winter.
Before President Clinton or after President Clinton?
I'm saying after the election.
Okay.
This feels like a December, January thing. I feel like HBO would at some point, because there's a lot of stuff from this season that's in that book, obviously, but then there's probably a lot of stuff that's not in the show already.
Yeah, he said he met with his editors and HBO, which is in New York.
So I think, I would think
so
that
you might have given them the manuscript that he gave his editors.
Right, maybe like January. I don't know, when's the hot time to bring out a new book? I don't know the book industry.
Fall is usually like when the biggest stuff comes out.
So, yeah. So we may be voting for president. We may be able to read the book in line to vote. But I think that's the earliest we can expect it.
Okay.
I like my idea better.
The Comic-Con thing?
I mean,
Comic-Con, say like you have less than a month.
Guys.
Just drop the mic.
After okay, first of all, a lot of people are pulling out of Comic-Con anyway. And secondly, after all of the pissy shenanigans they've pulled. I hope no one from HBO listens to this, or maybe I do. But after all the pissy shenanigans they've pulled, I'm guessing, I don't think Game of Thrones is going to do a panel. That's my prediction.
I don't think it's Game of Thrones. I think George R. R. Martin is just going to
He didn't go last year though.
Well, because he was writing. So the second he announces that he's coming, everyone's going to be like, oh shit.
All right. Okay.
But he loves Comic-Con. That's the only time I've been in a room with him.
He does love cons. It's true.
I don't think HBO has to go. I think it seems to me like HBO will go with the same kind of thing they did last year, where it'll be a bunch of the actors whose storylines are not up in the air, and they'll just talk about last season. It'll be great.
And they'll say, we haven't gotten the scripts yet, when that was a lie. It was actually a lie. I know now. That's the thing, is like I was sitting in that room in the panel and I was like, that's so smart. They didn't give them the scripts so they could all sit up there and truthfully say that they don't have the scripts. And then that Entertainment Weekly article came out and Maisie Williams was like, yeah, we got the scripts like a week before Comic-Con. And I was like, oh, you motherfuckers. You were all lying. All right, sorry.
Actors lying to you.
It's fine. It's fine. We're off topic. Let's get back to topic.
Kit Harington said he was sorry.
I don't think I'm forgetting anything in King's Landing that isn't the mountain ripping off Sub-Zero's finishing move from one of my favorite Mortal Kombat games.
The mountain was so good this week.
On Cast of Kings, we got a nice close-up of his undead eyeball. On Cast of Kings, Dave Chen claims he saw Spinal Cord come out with that head. Really? Okay, I just thought I gotta watch it with a slow down frame rate. I just saw a gash of blood. That's what I thought. I didn't know that I was looking.
There was definitely a little tail action to it, which I assume was either spinal cord or, you know, this is gonna be gross. If you were to rip someone's tongue out, it's not just the tongue.
Oh,
it's
the root.
Huge chunk of the throat. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Okay.
Definitely a spinal cord, though. I'll make that call because I was instantly be like, yes. I killed a couple of characters in D&D one time like that, and it was so satisfying. Even in words, this was very satisfying. Screw the Faith Militant.
Did you guys have friends? Did you guys have, like, I don't know if you're a little younger than I am, I think, but, like, my friends in middle school, all the guys wore No Fear t-shirts, and, like, one of the most popular ones definitely had a spinal cord on it, like a ripped out spinal cord on it. Okay.
Anyway. I had a Metallica shirt with a hand holding a skull with a ripped out spinal cord.
Nice. What was I going to say? Okay. If we believe that the wildfire plot is happening in episode 10, which we do.
Seems pretty safe at this point.
The question then is the body count. I believe Lancel's going to die. I believe Mace is going to die. I believe the High Sparrow is going to die. Probably Kevin and Pycelle via, like, Qyburn's little sparrows. But is Marjorie going to die? I think that, and Tommen, we think, is probably going to die. Do we think Marjorie's going to die? That's my big question mark. Natalie Dormer, does she make it out of the season alive?
Yes. I'm going to say yes, just so she could reunite with whatever the greater plot is with the rest of her family.
Why wouldn't she be in the Sept with all of them?
Unless she refuses to go to her brother's trial.
Oh, maybe.
I don't know. I think that this is a situation where we're going to get a wipeout.
Yeah. Clean slate.
Where it's Mace. I mean, basically everybody but Cersei in the Mountain and Qyburn.
And Qyburn and Lady Olenna, who wisely got
Lady
out of there.
Olenna, who is. So here's a question. I just rewatched the episode before we came on the air, and I swear I saw Lady Olenna in the crowd when Tommen's giving his proclamation, but that doesn't make sense, right? Like, my eyes are just playing tricks on me.
Yeah, she'd been gone.
She would have been gone, right?
I think she's gone.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah, and then the Septa is going to die. Yeah, everyone in King's Landing dies, except
King's Landing itself, I think, might go.
Might go. And then the follow-up question to that, which we talked about last week, but everyone else on the internet seems to be excited to talk about it, so let's talk about it again, is does Jaime come back just in time to see her do this and, like, you know, Mad King Aerys Redux kill her for what she did? And is that why we're getting this terrible extension of the Cersei Jaime love story when in the books by this point he's like, fuck Cersei, that cheating whore? Are we doing that so that it's more dramatically poignant when he has to kill her because he loves her so much?
That would be very, very dramatic. The other crackpot theory that I have that could be very dramatic would be Cersei and the Mountain and Qyburn escape King's Landing and are going to River Run, where Jaime is, and someone gets them on the way. Someone like Arya.
Someone like, ooh. Arya kills,
like the Brotherhood shows up.
First of all,
and it's Arya and the Hound, and they catch Cersei in the Mountain, and we get this, like, we get everything.
Yes.
All, not maybe not this season, but, like, maybe it ends with Cersei in the Mountain leaving and heading toward Jaime in the Riverlands, and Arya coming home and meeting up with the Brotherhood, and then we get next season, we just get Arya murder Cersei and the Clegane's fight, and, like, everything's amazing.
First of all, I've known Dave for years and recorded hundreds of hours of podcasts with him, and I've never heard him make that noise before.
That's just such a good way to do it. It's all the abbreviated list names. They're all right there. Oh, it's so beautiful. Where she's like, Jamie took the castle. I'm out of here. Screw this. Screw this town. And
well,
then
yeah, I mean,
someone's
think,
like,
okay,
no way, Tommen's
so...
in there. She's like, dead to me.
Well, no, if she burns down the Sept and Tommen dies, I mean, where else is she? What does she have? Like, she might leave and go find Jaime and maybe try to go back to Casterly Rock or something like that. It makes sense. I mean, especially if they really light King's Landing on fire.
I think you're right that, Cersei's going to hit the road. But I also think that with something as spectacular as burning down King's Landing and eliminating the, like, who gets to sit on the Iron Throne as even a question, doing what we predicted they've been doing would do for a couple years, which is just, like, this was a distraction and the real fight is up north. If they do that, I feel like the finale has to end with the explosion. And then we don't get like, unless you think they're going to have balls to do the explosion like mid episode, but I think the finale ends with the explosion. And like the second to last scene is Daenerys landing in Dorne and Olenna and Varys being there to greet her, her being like, let's go take King's Landing. And then Cersei exploding King's Landing. That's my prediction.
Yeah, but I think you could still do a shot of like Cersei, you know, in a,
that's anticlimactic. That's anticlimactic. If you're going to blow up the town, blow up the town and then cut to black. That's what I think. It's not usual. The typical thing, you're right, for Game of Thrones finales, the typical things is people hitting the road, going where they're going to go next. Mm-hmm. That's usually what they do. But I feel like that's because they usually reserve the fireworks for episodes 9. And this year they're spreading. The fireworks are oozing into episode 10 because they're going to have dragons in Westeros and wildfire in King's Landing. So.
But here's the question. I mean, they went through an entire year of, is Jon Snow alive? Do you think they'd cliffhanger Cersei?
No. They don't want to go through that hell again. They might cliffhanger Margaery, but I don't think they're going to cliffhanger Cersei.
Yeah. So I think Cersei, I think we'll get some finality to her thing, and I think it does involve heading back to Jaime. It honestly looked like Jaime was pretty comfortable at River Run for a little bit.
Yeah, I thought he was like very urgent to get back to Cersei. I'll slaughter every Tully that I can to get back to Cersei as soon as possible.
Then again, the timing on this show is so weird.
Yeah,
like the time space continuum is bent significantly by logic, and who knows? He could be back in King's Landing next week. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a good place to pivot into River Run, where we got to see the siege of River Run pretty much as you guys have described it to me. Mm-hmm. And as you guys predicted, Brienne and Pod taking the place as the Blackfish slipping out the back. We got that catapult line that Joanna loved, brought
yes!
back into the fold. God,
that's so such a good line.
It's so good, except in the books it's a fetus, not a baby. So that's even better. And I think in the book it's a trebuchet. A lot of people were mad that they changed trebuchet to catapult. I mean, we're all dorks, so we know the word trebuchet, right?
Trebuchet.
I learned it from what is it called? It's a Michael Crichton adaptation that was terrible that came out in college. Timeline, is that what it's called?
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. There's a siege, right? And they've got trebuchets, and the commander just kept going, trebuchet, night arrow. And night arrow is when you light an arrow on fire, I guess, according to this movie timeline. And my friends and I, like, to make fun of it for the next couple weeks, we're just like, trebuchet, night arrow. So you probably wanted to be friends with me in college, is my point. We can move on from that embarrassing thing.
I know what a trebuchet is.
Yeah.
A trebuchet is what the Sons of the Harpy were using to fling giant flaming barrels of whatever at Meereen, because it's a small thing.
It's a counterbalance sort of thing. It sort of whips around.
Right. And it's much longer, and it's used to hurl larger weights.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they have it in, like, in the Battle for Gondor, too, right? Aren't there trebuchets? Anyway. Sure. That's a reference to Lord of the Rings, which is a movie and a book series.
Okay. That's correct. I learned about the difference between a trebuchet and a catapult in the Boy Scouts, where we built both, and our catapult was good, and our trebuchet was not.
Anyway, sorry. Yes, I got my baby catapult line that I wanted. Continue the siege.
I mean, I really like this stuff because this is the like medieval history stuff that got me into the show in the first part, and like now I'm into the plot and the magic and the crazy religions and whether or not they're true. But this is the core stuff right here. You got siege camps, you got soldiers, you got Jaime in a battle of wits, you've got Edmure, who's fine, I guess, much better this week than he was last week. Yeah, I don't know.
Real working drawbridges. They really built that drawbridge.
Yeah, no, nice. it's The treatment of the River Run Castle, which I praised before, I continue to praise here. Not super psyched the Blackfish didn't get a fighting scene, but everything else, I mean, feels right for the show for me. So this is definitely my favorite part of this week's episode.
Yes. Chunk. Someone mentioned that they thought maybe Clive Russell just like didn't look good in like couldn't do the combat. And so they just left it out.
That's possible.
That might be possible. I still think we could have gotten him, like, I don't know, hauling the sword over his head and being like, forever run, or like, you know, whatever, and then cut to black, something. Because you know there's going to be the crackpot theorist. If we didn't see him die, it didn't happen. Like, with the waif, there's no question, because even though she died off camera, we saw her goddamn face on that wall. But Blackfish, keep hope alive if you want to.
I guess. Yeah, I think from an economic standpoint, they're not just going to keep bringing Clive Russell back every couple of years.
They could do worse.
I think that's why they kill the Blackfish. It really is one of those, like, you know, like Rob's wife kind of thing, where it's like, oh, well, does this character really matter for the end game? No. All right, well, let's just kill him then, because NBD. So I think that's kind of where they were with the Blackfish. It's disappointing that he didn't get like a Barristan Selmy style death, but you know, I mean, they had to get that, like,
well, they can't please anyone, because even the Barristan Selmy death ticked off book readers, so sure. You know,
right? I don't know, it doesn't bother me. And the Blackfish kind of went out in a way that I would expect the Blackfish, like, he growled a lot, and he, you know, committed to his castle, and it was always kind of weird in the books for me when he swam away, or they believe that he just swam away. I was like, really? You're just always on the run? So I guess to me, this almost feels like a better way to end his storyline.
Kind of, but I feel like Brienne was right. Like, why die for a pile of stones if you could live for your flesh and blood, which is Sansa Stark? Like,
oh, they were both right. Totally. Yeah. Right. And he was right to say that Brienne is better suited to counsel and protect Sansa.
I guess I have to say, like, the worst, I don't know what word I want to use. The people I admire the least this week are the Tully men, who just like ignore the Blackfish and we're like, oh, okay, we're going to listen to Edmure. I'm like, guys, come on. This is when the letter of the law is not as important as like what you're dealing with here. So,
well, I mean, isn't that the Jaime Brienne argument though? Sort of like echoed in very simple terms. Like, isn't honor bound things sometimes horrible?
Yeah, I mean, Jaime was right when, like, he was like, the castle actually belongs to us, and she's like, only because you killed Robb Stark at the Red Wedding. He's like, yeah, so
yeah,
and?
That's what we did to get it. Yeah.
That's how
wars end.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was a great line to Edmure when he's like, our families are at war. I'm sorry if that's inconvenienced to you. Like, yeah, we did some bad shit.
It's the Westeros version of, hey, just check your privilege real quick.
Yeah, we're winning.
Which one of you us is tied to a post? Not me? Okay, great. Which one of us has had a haircut within the last 2 years? Nah, me? All right, cool. I love, like, we have to agree. This is the closest the show has gotten to book Jaime in a while, this episode and a little bit last week, but mostly this episode. It's the best he's been, I think, in like two seasons. And if he only ever shares a scene with Cersei again to kill her, I will be happy, because that's where the Jaime character goes to die, when he's like Cersei's lapdog. It's not great, Bob.
Right. Well, yeah, she sent him to Dorne. Look how that turned out.
Ugh.
So what?
No,
was...
but you're right. This is the bravado version of Jaime Lannister that I think we've all liked, and also, but we get it all. We get the bravado version, this very driven version of him with Edmure, and then we get the sort of pragmatic and empathetic and
you could
real
keep my sword
person.
Version.
Yeah, with Brienne, because that's a true friend of his. It's probably the only real friend he has in life, you know, like his sister is one thing, but like he didn't really have any friends other than Brienne
and Bronn.
Right.
Well, I mean,
no, Bronn's a mercenary.
Even Bronn's kind of tired of his shit at this point.
Yeah,
yeah,
point.
And Bronn's a mercenary. Like, he would leave any of the Lannisters flat if he had to. Yeah, I love his stuff with Bran, and not just for like romantic gushy reasons, but like I love their dynamic and her really truly seeing the best, like the best in him, or the better version that he could be, and him struggling with all this family toxic garbage that keeps him from being the better version that he can't be. Like, it's just, it's so good. And you know, that whole line we talked about last week where like Bran meets a friend turned foe, which I think has since been debunked, or like basically those episode descriptions have been like proven to be, only half accurate at best. So that might be nothing, but if it's Jamie,
according to Entertainment Weekly, they are wrong.
Yeah, but they weren't entirely wrong. Cause like episode 8 one that was leaked was like 75% right. So they had some stuff wrong. So I'm not prepared to sweep it all under the rug, and I'm definitely not prepared to listen to anything Entertainment Weekly has to say on the subject, but, sorry. It's the end of the season. I'm feeling salty, but, you know, I really hope it's Jamie. If the show is smart, they'll put Brienne and Jamie back together, because, and Pod and Bronn, put the four of them back together. Come on. We'd be so happy.
Maybe she meets an old foe who is now a friend, and it's the Hound.
It could be the Hound.
That would be cool.
All right.
And they catch Cersei and they murder Cersei.
No, that has to be Arya.
Dave wants Arya to do it. He will only make the noise if it's Arya. So.
I really do think that it lines up narratively in a fun way, but I don't think it would happen until next season, but it lines up.
Well, there's also the Nymeria Wolfpack thing. Like, we expect there to be a Nymeria Wolfpack scene before the end of the season. Well, I mean, I'm guessing episode 10 then. So is that, Arya being reunited with Nymeria to give us like at least one positive direwolf moment of the season? Is it Nymeria and the Wolfpack taking, like, eating someone we don't like, eating some Freys? I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, maybe some Freys.
Yeah.
Maybe the wolf pack is leading Lady Stoneheart around. Like,
just like dressed in her skeleton.
This is going to turn into a Rick and Morty reference real quick.
That is a
Dead Cat Ladies
show.
Has two.
It is Nymeria who pulls Catelyn out of the river, right? So yeah, if Nymeria
is the books, I know that happens.
So here's the question:
if Nymeria is still just dragging around the corpse of Lady Boneheart, is that what you're saying?
How long
does that
corpse survive in water?
Does that count for you being right about Lady Stoneheart? If Nymeria, what if Nymeria just has like one bone in her mouth and it's ambiguous?
Oh yeah, no, that counts. That means Lady Stoneheart's
it's ambiguous.
In the show.
It's ambiguous whose bone it is. Like,
like, now's the time for subtlety.
It's probably a femur, but you're not sure.
It can't be anyone else's bone, obviously.
Okay, Lady Boneheart it is.
Since we used to be a show about adaptation from the books, what is the benefit of moving River Run here to the plot? It obviously puts Jaime and Brienne in the same place for a period of time, but is it about putting them on the way to where they need to be in the future, or was this the destination for them and that's why they had River Run this season?
I think they had River Run this season because they wanted to send Jaime to Dorne last season, and they were also stretching out book stuff and like feeling like they couldn't do Dorne and River Run in one season because it's too many, like, let's move everything to a new location. They were like, okay, let's do Dorne this year and then we can go circle back and do River Run next year and it'll be fine. But yeah, I don't know. I really do think that it's going to be Brienne and Jaime coming back together, and Brienne is going to take Jaime captive because that's where we are in the books. Right? Is that Brienne kind of has Jaime. So that's what I'm guessing is going to happen in episode 10. And that's not just wishful thinking, but it's a lot wishful thinking.
Well, and I think, to answer the original question, you're right about the Dorne thing in that, I think as soon as they made the decision that they weren't going to go through with the whole Dorne plan from the books, like when they cut out Arianne Martell and Quentin Martell and kind of all that business, I think that's when they were like, well, we still need to tie up this Dorne thing because Dorne is potentially very important for Daenerys. So that's why they did the whole kind of half-cocked Dorne plot from last year. And moving the Riverlands stuff makes sense thematically because – now you're coming back to it now when it's all about kind of the cleanup of the war, and you can delve into these different stories. Even if they don't do Lady Stoneheart, you can delve into what the Brotherhood's been doing. You can bring back Walder Frey. You can kind of bring back the old wounds of what really started this whole thing off right before everything falls apart.
Like close to what could be a conclusion, only to have the White Walkers and dragons all over it.
Sure, and I think that there is potentially a conclusion to what's going on in the middle of Westeros. You know, from what we're talking about with Cersei to, you know, the Riverlands being tied up. I think they really need to kind of dispatch with that those storylines so that they can focus on the two armies that are going to be coming from the south and the north.
I've heard a lot of listeners complain to me that, not complain, but like vent their frustration that a real recurring theme this season is to bring back old characters just to kill them really quickly. It's like, as you say, like tying up loose ends. So, I mean, hopefully Thoros and Beric are going to stick around for a while, but, you know, to bring back Osha or the Blackfish, or there were a couple other examples that
or
I can't remember.
Or Jon Snow, who's obviously going to die next week.
If I die this time, don't bring me back. That's my terrible Jon Snow. Oh, Dave's the one who does the Jon Snow impression, so.
You have to wait till next week for that one.
Damn it. All right. Anyway, the tying up loose ends or bumping off Roos, bumping off like all the satellite characters so we can just boil this all down to our core cast and focus it on the great war to come in the last 13 episodes.
So it has basically, if I'm extrapolating forward, it had the excellent benefit of getting Brienne and Jaime in the same place when we needed them to be.
Maybe, right. If I'm
so
right.
Like, yeah. Jaime went to Dorne and Brienne had to watch Lighthouse Tower for a while.
Yes.
Tower at Winterfell for a whole season. And then they got to get recuperated.
It's the most pathetic thing they could have done to be like, let's burn a season with Brienne. All right, stand in the snow and watch a candle. Like, I would almost rather she had just been gone for a season, like Bran. I wish that they would like learn more that they can just do that. I mean, they kind of did that with Sam this season, right? Sam got like one scene and then one episode, but like it's good because we don't have a lot to do with Sam, I guess. So, you know, yeah. he's just barely in the show. It's fine. It's fine.
Well, so does the fact that Brienne and Jaime are going to end up basically where they are at the end of the book suggest that there aren't any POV chapters in that part for Winds of Winter?
I don't know.
Or did they hold a little bit for Martin to actually go for the books?
I feel like there's still a little bit of holding. Like, they're still holding some stuff back.
Well, I also...
But it doesn't surprise me that they've ended up in the same place that they ended up in the books, because as much as people are very consumed by this notion that the show has moved on from the books, the show has moved past the books, but it has not moved on.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a completely different story. So we're still going to get some of the same. I mean, we're getting the Siege of Meereen. Like, that's the end of the fifth book, exactly. So they took the long way, but they ended up in the same spot.
Oh, yeah. Let's pivot from there to Meereen. So Tyrion and Varys are walking the streets again, which apparently they do, which seems like a weird thing because it doesn't seem like Meereen's that politically stable to just walk around like two guys that obviously can't fight. But I'm not going to worry about that because there's lots of other stuff to worry about. Like,
we finally saw some Unsullied this week.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, in the streets of Meereen patrolling.
We did. So that's nice. And apparently they could hold the pyramid if they needed to, supposedly. But most importantly, drinking games continue on the show between three characters that I'd never needed to see interact, it turns out. And then the Masters show up. Conveniently, as Varys leaves, as I'm sure Joanna would like me to point out.
Right? Yes, thank you.
And then Daenerys shows up and gets airlifted to the top of her pyramid, and Drogon goes off to do God knows what. To next episode's budget is where he flew off to.
To find his brothers, right?
I mean, that would be maybe the hope. Is there a moment to be had of all three dragon reveal? And is that probably where we're going to end this siege next week?
Sounds logical.
I think it'd be cool if they... I think Neil's the one who suggested this, that they, if they come, like, bursting out of the underground. I mean, the Marines fucked, right? Like, they're trebucheting the shit out of that city. It's burning down. I think someone,
all they're doing is pissing off those dragons at this point.
And like someone pointed out that like Drogon could end this siege really quickly by just roasting all those ships. But then like Dany maybe wants those ships. So that means they're going to have to wait for the Ironborn to show up and block the ships in and then board the ships as Neil and Dave were talking about last week. This is where I get to, as Dave evocatively put it to me on the phone yesterday, eat shit. Because I said the chandelier shaking was not Drogon landing on the pyramid, and Neil and Dave said it was. So,
woo, we didn't have to bring that up, but shit. Yeah,
I have eaten shit. Well, I like to admit when I'm wrong so that I can like be super insufferably smug when I'm right. So there you go.
Yeah, like when Varys turns out to be the head of the Sons of the Harpy.
Laugh it up, Clegane. Laugh it up.
So do you think, okay, what place, if any, does Dany and her dragons have in episode 10, just landing? We just going to see the last of Marine and that plot this next episode?
So next episode, so we've seen a shot of like the Dothraki hooves thundering through what looks like sand. So we're going to see the Siege of Marine, which is the Ironborn showing up. I mean, and it's only 2/3 of the episode, right, in theory? So, you know, that's what, 20 minutes? Less than 20 minutes for the Siege of Marine?
One-third of the episode?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
So the Dothraki have to show up and, like, be useful. The dragons have to do something useful, and the Ironborn have to do something useful. And then, unless it's only part of the Siege of Marine in this episode, and then we finish it in the finale.
Then there's the Varys Scooby-Doo Sons of the Harpy reveal at the end of like, they're, like, on a ship, and they pull a mask off, and he's like, Drat, my plans!
No.
When I'm right about this, I didn't say it was Varys. I just said there's something going on. When I'm right, I will be the worst. And when I'm wrong, I will eat shit. So,
well, here's the thing. So if Varys is behind the Sons of the Harpy, his goal is not to defeat Daenerys. His goal is to get her on her way back to Westeros, where he thinks that she should be restored. So I definitely don't think there's gonna be a Scooby-Doo ending.
Right, he's already in Dorne, right?
We're pretty sure he's headed to Dorne.
I know a lot of people think that he's going back to King's Landing so that he can do the Kevin Lannister thing. I just don't see that happening.
Right.
Yeah.
There's more plotting out there. It's a secret mission.
Yeah.
You know, he's gonna go hook up with the Tyrells.
He said we need friends and ships. So going to King's Landing is going to get you none of that, right. In fact. So, yeah, I understand, like, because that's what he does in the book, so I understand that that's why people think that. But I really think Qyburn's going to take that on for him.
And you know who has the second largest fleet in all of Westeros?
Well, let me guess. Wait. Craster?
Nope.
Who is it?
It's Dorne.
What?
It's the Ironborn and Dorne. Those are the two biggest fleets in Westeros. Unless Euron made 1,000 ships like in 2 weeks,
but see,
the Dornish are her best chance.
Has it been 2 weeks? Like, we don't know what time, how much time has passed.
We're almost
there. How long
was
Arya asleep for? Yeah.
Exactly. We're like one of our great listeners, Wiki Rascals on Twitter, put a like two, what did he do? 2 months later, Chiron over Arya waking up in Lady Crane's house. It's like, yes, that would explain that plot. 2 months later, she has healed from her abdominal wounds.
That's it. You know, let's follow that train of thought all the way to Arya's plot line.
Oh, God. Okay.
Which, you know, we'll go out with it. The episode is titled No One After All. It could have been titled Nothing for Things We Learned. It could have been titled Terminator 2 Judgment Day for Things We Saw.
The Arya Supremacy?
Oh, the Arya Supremacy is pretty good.
The Arya Ultimatum.
That's good, because it's also about going from no one to the person you were before. So that's like, I guess we should actually do that one.
It's got layers to it.
Yeah, it does.
I think it was titled No One to denote who is going to understand what the Bravos thing was worth.
So after an episode where we couldn't understand what happened to make Arya so stupid, she reveals that the answer to Arya's awesomeness is her Wolverine-like healing powers that turn opium into white blood cells and internal stitches that allow you to parkour around when your intestines have been lacerated mere days before. But hey, sword fighting in the dark, some face cutting off, and then a badass line and a little Jack and Hagar smirking, and we're out of there. Well, probably never to return.
Bye bye, Bravos.
She's tendered her resignation officially with the Faceless Men.
Bye bye, Bravos Williams. Forever, right?
Didn't Maisie Williams say that we were going to be bored by her plot line this season?
She said people weren't going to like it. Yeah.
Weren't going to like it. Well, there you go. That girl is so smart. They should let her just write her own character sometimes, I think.
I covered this in the Easter eggs post, but that I do on vanityfair.com, but I really did like there is a pretty clear symmetry to how John quits his job and Arya quits her job in terms of the shot where they're like slashing something. For him, it's a rope. For her, it's the candle. Then you see, you know, Ollie's bloated face and the waves, like, you know, disenfaced face, disenheaded face. And then you have them walk towards camera as they say a great line. So, you know, the Starks have quit their other preoccupation and they're going to go back to being full-time Starks, Starking it up in Westeros. So.
But if there was going to be one guy that smirked and one guy that looked bewildered, I would have switched Jaqen and Ed, because Jaqen smirking makes no sense.
I mean,
does it?
Unless save me with your crackpotitude, Neil.
So I think the only thing, you know, obviously Arya is a medical marvel here. Like, her healing ability is insane. The only thing that did make sense was kind of the deal at the end with Jaqen, is that he gets that her training is over and he understands that now a debt has been paid. And they're like square. And I really do question whether or not he really ever thought she would become a faceless man, or whether he felt that he was training her. Like, so I guess the greater question is that Jaqen H'ghar, or is that somebody completely different? Because if it's the same guy that she met in the Riverlands at Harrenhal, then it makes sense that he is just training her. Like, he believes that she is a special kind of killer and that he just needs to help her get where she needs to go. But if it is a completely different guy, then it's totally weird. Like, he's just kind of making the rules up as he goes along. I want to assume that Jaqen's motivation there is, I've given Arya the tools. She was never going to be no one. Now she can go forth and be part of the greater war and be the agent of the God of Death in Westeros.
Either
that go
well, either agent of the God of Death, or as much as we got about the Hound being the chosen one in this episode, there is this theory that Arya is a chosen one to some degree, and like the fact that Syrio, and why was Jaqen in King's Landing? Not that Jaqen is Syrio, but like, why was a faceless man a prisoner in King's Landing when they're like super badass ninjas who can do whatever the fuck they want.
Right.
And so were the faceless men, or were the Bravosi watching Arya from the start, knew she had a destiny to fulfill in the great war to come. And their job is to train her not to be a faceless man, but to be, whatever it is she needs to be, in the war. I don't know if I just said the same thing you said, Neil, but, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's this, the notion that there's some destiny involved,
yeah,
and that Jaqen recognizes that in Arya. I mean, it could be as simple as, you know, when they met, she was still reciting her list every night, and he recognizes that she kind of gets the same ideals as the faceless men. Like, there are names and there are things that need to be paid to the god of death. So it was just him getting her to the point where she can go and truly carry out her list. So I think that made sense to me. The rest of it, just a dumpster fire of logic.
I need one more scene for that storyline to make sense for me. And it would have to be in Westeros, and it would have to be basically someone telling Arya something. And there are ways to deal with that I like, but I think that's too complex for the show to portray the way it's been engineered. But I would love to be proven wrong and get all this Arya time back. Because as it is now, like, rewatching the show, these are the skippable scenes.
Yeah, and it's weird because the end of, in the behind the scenes, inside the episode, Dan Weiss says, basically that in that moment, they both come to an understanding that, like, okay, we're square now, which seems extremely simple, but it's also something that I wouldn't put past the show to not think past, like, wait, are we sure that the Faceless Men would just let her go? And, like, is this guy in charge of the Faceless Men?
Well, there's, literally no one else there. Like, does he have any other employees? One? Yeah.
There were two employees at the Unitarian Murder Church. One is super cool, and the other one was Robert Patrick from Terminator 2. So,
The question I have, this is something actually that Dave Chen brought up that I didn't consider, which is that, like, he said a girl has become no one, when that's like the exact opposite of what she did. Like, she was never not motivated by her own personal what have you. She killed the Wayfarer for survival, but she, like, protected Lady Crane. Like, she did nothing to achieve the Zen Nirvana ideals of becoming no one that she was supposed to. And
right.
So
she's just Arya murder child now.
Right. So why, like, it's fine for him to be like, smirk, smirk, walk away, child, you have a destiny to fulfill. But before that, why did he say, a girl is no one? Like, that, no, she did not graduate. She flunked out of murder school.
Maybe it's like Searching for Bobby Fischer, where the Ben Kingsley character, like, tempts him with the certificate, and then, like, two-thirds of the way through the movie, he's like, the certificates mean nothing. You want another, and another, and another?
Maybe it's like finding Forrester, and he's like, you're the man now, dog. Like, go do what you need to do.
At least we got a good
search for Arya
Fischer. That one.
These are all movies that exist in the world.
Yep. Have fun Googling them, folks. Okay, let's project forward a little bit in these final moments of the podcast. Two episodes left. Is there anything that we haven't talked about you guys are certain that we're going to get before the season's out? I mean, obviously, Battle of the Bastards we've talked about. We've speculated a little bit that next week that, Littlefinger's army's going to show up just in time. We have the exploding sept in King's Landing, and we have some vague ideas that Brienne and Jaime might be doing some stuff. I want Arya to kill Cersei, obviously, but what do you guys hope happens?
Well, I do want to spend a lot of time next week talking about this, about, like, who we think is going to get airtime in the finale and who isn't. Like, is Jorah coming back? Are Sam and Gilly coming back? Or are we done with them for the season? Like, what are we talking about here?
Well, let's not assume that one-third, two-thirds split is 100% correct. Let's say maybe
we
get
just
scenes
for next week.
I think it is because, I mean, all they've shown us is Battle of the Bastards. Like, I even wonder if they're going to do promo photos for next week or if their promo photos are going to be like just stills from the trailer they already showed us.
Sansa sitting on a horse. Lyanna Mormont sitting on a horse.
But let's talk about trailer things that we haven't seen yet. Littlefinger turning around in the snow. That's something that's coming.
Okay.
Like, outside of what we saw on The Next Time On, what haven't we seen?
All about
Davos.
Oh, so yeah, Davos at the Shireen.
At the pyre, but that's in The Next Time On.
So we expect something to happen between him and Melisandre.
Yes. Mel is back next week. She's out of hiding.
Here's my big question, Joanna.
Okay.
Because, I mean, we went through a whole year of being lied to about Kit Harington's involvement in the show. And Kit Harington did say in numerous interviews in the offseason, I'm no longer involved with the show. If he dies in episode 9, like, and the whole don't bring me back thing is real, is he forgiven slightly because technically he's no longer involved in the show?
No.
Okay.
No one's ever forgiven.
They're never forgiven.
That's kind of the answer.
The real question is Kit Harington ever going to forgive us for stalking him for like 9 months or whatever? The answer, I hope, is no.
Should have cut his hair.
Should have shaved his face like he did for Mass Effect or Call of Duty or whatever it is. Yeah, fake gamer girl right here. Yeah, I don't know. I'm curious. I think my biggest question is, does Marjorie Terrell die? That's my biggest question. Cause like, I mean, well, the thing is, like, I don't think you can kill all the Lannisters this season. Cause like Varys and Olenna and Daenerys are gonna come and fuck some shit up, but whose shit are they gonna fuck up? Are they gonna fuck up River Run because Jaime's still there? Like, what's gonna happen? Like, you know, I'm curious. But as for next week, I think, you know, it's just gonna. I don't love the battle episodes, though. I was rewatching a bit of Watchers on the Wall today, which I said I hated at the time. But John is so good in that episode. Kit Harington is really good. And John is a general.
There's a ton of good stuff in that episode.
Well, you know, I don't agree with all the things that people like in that episode. But John, as a general, is really good. He's very decisive. But John this season is super wishy-washy. So I don't know if
he doesn't seem very. It's weird because in the next week on, he's giving like what seems to be a speech, but he almost seems like he's giving it softly.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like the speech at the end of Braveheart. It's like he's just like saying it to someone in a room somewhere. There's a very eerie quality to that. That I think that they really do want people to believe that John might not make it, which is fine if he doesn't. But also, I mean, come on.
I just don't believe that he's in any danger.
I think we're in for some pretty crazy shit because most of the times we have a big battle, there's like some weird supernatural element, and this is going to be the height of Westerosi brutality against Jon Snow and a whole bunch of Northmen.
A giant. There's a giant.
So. There's a giant. Fair enough. But there's not like a huge scythe swinging down off a giant wall or green fireball that I know of in Winterfell. So I'm looking forward to some, like I enjoyed River Run's straight medieval warfare. I'm looking forward to some more straight medieval warfare. And obviously, finally bumping Ramsay Snow off the show. They've given us a long enough time to like kind of forget that we hate him so much. The second he shows up on screen, that's all going to flood back.
Have we talked about the spoiler about that?
Maybe. We could go over it again. This would certainly be the episode for it.
All right. Fast forward, please.
At this point, you might as well just fast forward to the end.
that he and John, like, John is in the process of killing him. This is different from what I said before, I think. John is in the process of killing him. I think Sansa stops John from killing him. I don't know why.
She wants to do it.
Ramsay gets locked up in the kennels and then his own dogs eat him. Like, but not because the Starks like meant for them to. They just do. And I don't know if that happens in the finale. Like he gets maybe survives episode 9, but gets eaten by his own dogs in the finale or what.
Just so off screen.
That's a spoiler I read. So,
man, that's a weird one.
I mean, I guess we'll it's fitting. I don't know. I feel like you could just go honor bound with it.
I mean, is there a death that's worthy of all the bad shit that he's done in the show?
I don't know if there is. Sansa and Jon should beat him to death like that scene in Office Space where they beat the shit out of the fax machine. Like, that's what we should get. We should get some, like,
or maybe
gangster rap and the Starks taking turns bludgeoning him to death. That's what I would like to see. But
I mean, the most boss bitch way for this to happen would be Sansa stops Jon, Ramsay's pretty much dead. She just walks over, grabs his hair, and cuts his throat.
That's true.
That's probably the best way for this to happen.
Is there Is there a version of episode 9 where we don't get mad at Sansa for not telling Jon and Davos that Littlefinger is coming?
Yes. If Littlefinger shows up and turns around in the snow and they know that he's coming and that it's a surprise to everybody else. Like,
oh, like if he shows up before they go out to battle?
Like, things are looking bad. Sansa doesn't want to, like, tip her hand, but then, like, Littlefinger shows up, and, like, it's more of a surprise to the Boltons than it is to us. And that wouldn't be great for, like, television storytelling, but it would make me feel better about Sansa's thing. Like I said last week, like, we just saw her, like, write the note. Like, if she does tell Jon, or tells Jon off-screen, or, like, is aware of it, like, keeping it, us not seeing it versus her not telling it would make a big difference to me.
Well, so, like, let's say Weiss and Benioff did not think the internet would go full forensic enhance on Sansa's scroll and figure out for sure that she's writing to Littlefinger, because a lot of people were uncertain at first. So they're assuming that the average watcher is not sure who Sansa was writing to. So they think no help is coming. And then, you know, they're going to play this episode out where the Starks are losing. And if you're watching, you could watch and say, like, well, fuck, this is Game of Thrones. I saw Oberyn's head get popped. Like, all my favorite characters could die right now in this Battle of the Bastards, and Ramsay could win because he keeps winning. He cannot win. So he's going to win. And then the Knights of the Vale show up. Like, I feel like that's exactly how they're going to do it. It's going to be, as many people have pointed out, Gandalf and the Rohirrim in, The Two Towers. That's a movie from The Lord of the Rings. It's a trilogy of movies that came out. There's no way that these people, that the Vale Knights don't show up the last minute and save everyone. And then we get mad at Sansa for not telling Jon and Davos and letting them know that help is coming. But all those people who died, people who died because they didn't, they went in without the full strength that had coming.
But here's the thing about the Lord of the Rings connection is Gandalf is on a timer. You know he's coming. We weren't supposed to enhance, we don't know Littlefinger's coming. He could still show up and be like, they're not going to get here in time, and they're just, like, fucked. And we could still get the snow scene, we could still get Sansa being honest, and we could still get the reveal that, like, the Knights of the Vale use some Mockingbird Airways technology. No? You just think Sansa's just withholding information from other characters and I should hate her?
No, you don't have to hate her. I'm just saying, well,
yes, I do. On principle, I have to hate her.
we know Gandalf is coming because we've read the books, but I feel like there are some people who watch the movies and they hear, look to my coming at first life on the fifth day or whatever, like, and they don't, like,
they don't put two and two
they
together.
Forget it. They forget that Gandalf is coming and bringing the horse lords with him, you know? So, like, I don't know. And, like, here's another question. I've been called out for saying Deus Ex Machina too many times in this podcast, so I think I stopped. I don't think I said it this episode. But the question is it a Deus Ex Machina if it's been foreshadowed? Like, the Ironborn have been foreshadowed. The Knights of the Vale coming have been foreshadowed. Is that really a Deus Ex Machina, or is that just the cavalry arriving?
That's just the cavalry arriving. You know? I think it's like, because the Deus Ex Machina has to be like, there's an otherworldly power that comes in and changes what we know. We have these, like, little threads that allow us to, like, speculate, so that means that it's at least there. The Deus Ex Machina is, you know, I think much more abrasive, or when it happens in this story, it will actually be a god.
According to Wikipedia, that ironclad source, the term has evolved to mean a plot device whereby a seemingly unsolvable problem is suddenly and abruptly resolved by the inspired and unexpected intervention of some new event, character, ability, or object.
That's really vague.
Yeah. I think hinges on...
It takes the god out of it.
It hinges on unexpected intervention. So if we spoiler holics expect the Knights of the Vale and expect the Ironborn to come, there you go. But I think there are some people who are going to be watching the show and be like, oh my God, they're going to lose the battle. Like both Daenerys and Jon are going to lose their battles. And then
Because the Knights in the Vale and the Ironborn is fine. What Neil talked about with Dorne having the second largest ships, if that, once Dany goes there, that'll be a deus ex machina because they haven't never talked about Dorne's ships.
That's a good point. Yeah.
It may have been mentioned in passing, but...
No, you're right. If the Ironborn If the Ironborn show up, it's fine. But if like the Dornish fleet shows up and it's Varys at the prow and he's like, I've been to Dorne and back. Here are the ships. Right. You're right. That's the Deus Ex Machina. You're right. Also, right. the Sons of the Harpy were my idea.
Then less of a Deus Ex Machina, actually, according to you.
According to me. Okay. I hope people didn't fast forward through this very informative section on this defining
debate
terms.
On the semantics of Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's somebody who just got a degree like a few weeks ago that's pulling their hair out, and you know, please be nice and correct us about what the actual term is.
I did want to bring it up because I know a lot of people thought we were talking about the film Ex Machina starring Oscar Isaac and Donald Gleeson. If Oscar Isaac dances up the Pyramid of Marine to save everyone, that would be a Deus Ex Machina.
It would also be awesome.
It would be so awesome.
You won't believe what happened on last night's Game of Thrones will actually be an applicable headline if that happens.
I do. It's funny, though. I do think that you're right about, you know, normal show watchers, people who don't listen to our podcast or any podcast, like my mom, she's going to be blown away when Littlefinger shows up and saves the day.
Right.
Because no one's it's like the Hound coming back, where it's like people who just watched the show were like, holy shit, it's the Hound. And book readers just like, uh-huh.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not even like, uh-huh. I'm like, how do you live your life, you precious little gem of a human?
Sweet summer child.
Yeah, you go through life like a little jellyfish. I'm so happy for you.
I mean, I guess the question is if Littlefinger shows up, is Dave Chen going to be surprised? Because Dave Chen is that person in our Joannaverse of podcasts. Do you think he's going to be blown away?
Dave asked me who Sansa was writing to, and I said I was pretty sure it was Littlefinger, and I felt like that. I didn't feel like it was a spoiler at the time to say that. Like,
but if you hadn't said anything,
he might be surprised when Yara and Theon show up in Marine. Maybe okay.
He's a good barometer for that.
But even
the whole point.
Even with that, Yara's like, "We're going to Marine," so if they show up in Marine, like, you know, that's where they said they were going. So when they showed up in Volantis, I think some people were surprised because they had no idea where Theon and Yara were going when they left. Yeah, but now that they're over in Essos and said they're going to Marine, if they show up in Marine next week, everyone can just be like, yep, that's where they said they were going.
Hey, remember that time we said we were going to go do that thing and then we got there and I wasn't surprised at all?
I think the biggest shocker of the finale is not going to be King's Landing blowing up. I think it's going to be going back to Dorne. Like, I want to hear like show watchers around the world be like, no, I thought we were done with Dorne. We're back in Dorne.
Well, they'll have Lady Olenna there to make sure everybody's like, oh, but I like her.
Yeah.
All right. And Varys. We get two characters we like added to the Dorne plot.
And think how
see if that works.
Think how great they're going to look in Dornish gold. Like, their robe game, both of them, is often on point. So they're just going to, like, blend in. It's going to be great.
There's a structure where the last 10 minutes of episode 10 are just like shock after shock, and then everybody has to spend an hour afterwards on the internet just like typing nonsense letters into Twitter. And that's what we got to hope for. But we're definitely going to be talking about that next week after episode 9 when that's all we're going to have to talk about. So until then, where can people find more of your writing on the internet, Mr. Neil Miller?
Wait, can we do another point?
Oh, yes.
Should we announce that we're going to do an off-season podcast? Didn't we say we were going to do that?
I mean, we can do that whenever we want. We're going to do an off-season podcast. In case you caught the episode of Republic City Dispatch where Matt Patches outed us without telling us he was going to, we're going to continue Storm of Spoilers in off-season.
Did he out us?
Yes, he did. We're going to continue Swarm of Spoilers in the off-season in some form that will be not necessarily Game of Thrones-centric. We're going to visit some of your other favorite properties that have... Sometimes they're adapted for spoilers. Sometimes they're just general spoilers out there. We're sort of narrowing down some topics. But we're definitely going to stick around
after
Game of
Thrones. We're getting in a boat, basically.
We're going to get in a boat. We're going to go on a tour of our favorite fictional lands and bring our storm of spoilers. We're going to ride the storm. It's going to be pretty sweet. That's coming together. And
it really is
details.
Full circle for us.
There's going to be more details.
After the first season that we did the boat t-shirt.
We did do our boat cheer way too early. There's going to be... stay on this feed. There's going to be other stuff. It will all be very clearly labeled, so you will be able to delete things that you obviously don't want to. There'll be a long... preamble about what we'll be spoiling, I'm sure, on each of these episodes. But stick around, guys. We're going to go year-round, officially. So rejoice on that, and keep reading all our
stuff
on the internet.
Also, thanks, Patches.
Yeah, thanks, Patches. Outing us on a Voltron show.
What? Did he do that? Okay.
He's just excited. He's as excited
as we are. I'm going to leave them a really nasty 5-star review on iTunes.
Anyway, until next week, where can we find more of you on the internet? Now, Neil Miller.
You can find me at filmschoolrejects.com, where I write about Game of Thrones and other things. You can follow me on Twitter at Rejects, and you can follow us at Storm of Spoilers, where we'll be continuing to post Game of Thrones things until the end of Game of Thrones, and then we'll post some other stuff.
And Joanna Robinson.
I'm Jen Robinson. You can find me on VanityFair.com. You can follow me at Feminist Platform on Twitter. We'll be back next week.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. You could follow me on Twitter at DA7E. I write at Geek.com and Latino-Review.com. I do podcasts at FightingInTheWarRoom.com, where all of you guys are really nice to me in the reviews this week for that show. So, man, you guys are subscribed to everything just perfectly. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week.